This episode of the Sustainability Scope was brought to you by AM Custom Clothing. If you need sustainable custom branded clothing for your business, band or brand, head to amcustomclothing.co.uk today.
Welcome to the Sustainability Scope with me, Alex.
And me, Mike.
The show that cuts through the noise about sustainability to help you make informed decisions, whether you're an individual or a business.
So joining us today is Kim Tang. She grows sustainable brands and positive impact companies through elevating their brand and design. She's a founder of Design for Good Club, a studio that cares about purposeful design work. She also coaches people on how to escape the corporate world. Now, I could go on and on and on about all the stuff that Kim's done and is doing, but I think it's probably better if we hear from the woman herself. So, Kim, this isn't what you've always done, is it? What kind of sparked you into moving into sort of helping sustainable brands exclusively?
Yeah, hi, Mike. I guess this is where I introduced myself. I just wanted to thank you both for having me on the podcast. It's great to kind of speak to you both about sustainability and like my own journey into it. Yeah, you're right. It isn't what I've always done. I started off my career in behavioral change as a consultant. And it was there that I got really interested in why people do what they do. And then I switched careers into design because I always wanted to do something a bit more creative. I was doing that at ASOS, getting really into how like design can support the shopping journey. But while I was there, I mean, it was my like dream company to work for. I was really excited to be there. But I was learning a lot more about like the fashion industry itself and realized that I was part of the problem. So I was a bit of a fast fashion addict at the time, the type of person that would buy those huge hauls of crap that I would just never wear. And then return it, maybe wear it once and then discard it. Send it to a charity shop thinking that it was going to get recycled. And so while I was at ASOS, I made a real effort to like change my shopping behaviors. It was around this time that I realized that I could kind of combine that expertise and experience in behavior change with what I was doing as a designer and start thinking about how I can have more impact on trying to encourage more sustainable shopping behaviors. And so that's kind of what like sparked off a desire to work with more sustainable brands and help them with how they attract consumers and customers to purchase from them. So I'm a real big believer in trying to shift people away from, you know, buying products that don't last or that aren't quality and shifting their behaviors towards purchasing the more sustainable or conscious option. So yeah, that's like a little brief like bit of context into like the journey.
That's interesting. So you kind of had a sustainable epiphany part way through.
I guess you could say that. It was more I had to take a real hard look at myself. Just thinking, what am I doing? No, I think this is the hardest thing though about sustainability is that our intentions or our attitudes often don't match up with our actions and behaviors. And that's that. Yeah, I mean, that's a real struggle. Like even personally, like I knew that, I mean, we're all kind of aware of the negative impacts of the fashion industry. I mean, it doesn't, you'd have to literally be living under a rock to not have, you know, come across things like the incident in Bangladesh where like the workers were like subject to not particularly great working practices and there are a number of deaths there. But I think where people sort of turn a blind eye to it is that we can often feel like quite far removed from the people that are experiencing those negative impacts of our behavior. So I think it's by becoming more aware and conscious of it and actually taking that attitude or that belief that step further and changing our actions, that's where we'll start to see the change. So yeah, I think it was for me, it was okay, like I need to not only have that belief or that change in belief, but actually like put my money where my mouth is, I guess, so to speak.
It's interesting because I think actually what you're doing in your work then is you're helping people follow the exact same path that you did, helping them kind of come to that realization later on. Because I think it's okay, isn't it? Like, you don't have to be born perfect. No one is. But as long as you kind of are heading in the right direction, you go in the right place.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you sort of want to meet the customer at the point of the journey that they're on, right? Like, no one's going to be perfect. Like, I wouldn't say that everything I buy is completely sustainable. There's times where, like, I get caught out because I need something out of convenience. I think it's about taking those small steps where you can. Giving yourself a bit of slack where maybe you haven't been able to buy the sustainable option. That is ultimately what I'm trying to do with Design for Good Club. Is the overall mission is that I want the sustainable option to be the only option available for people to buy. So, like, my ideal would be, you know, instead of people going on Amazon, is there some sort of marketplace where people can go to and buy, products that use more sustainable materials, or maybe aren't shipped from, like, the other side of the world to get to them. That's the dream world that I'm envisioning. By working with clients that have products that are really trying to embed sustainable practices in the way that they're made, in the way that they're delivered to customers, in the way that they're kind of recycled or reused, I'm hoping that, you know, what I'm doing will eventually contribute to that overall change in shopping behaviors.
That's cool.
Do you have, like, kind of a framework for what you define as a sustainable kind of brand for when you're thinking of, like, your clients, and also, I guess, from a purchasing perspective?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and it's something that I sat with for a really long time before I even, like, started trying to find clients, because I had, you know, the question of, like, well, what if, like, Shell came to me and wanted to do a project, would I accept that, or Boohoo? Yeah. And I think fundamentally where I started off with was, what are my values? And so on my website, I've got those, and that's really something that I hold to be quite important. And it's one of the things that actually a few of the clients that I have done projects for picked up on, and they said the reason why we went with you is because we have those shared values around, around sustainability, around inclusivity. So it's helped me kind of connect with the types of customers that I want to work with. But it's left room for me to interpret that on more of a kind of ad hoc basis. So I think it's really contextual, right? It depends on what project that client is coming to me with, and whether, you know, I think there's some, like, genuine intention behind trying to be more sustainable. So if you take some energy companies, for example, like, they do have a sustainable arm to them, but if you compare the amount of money that they sort of plug into that arm versus the non-renewable side of their companies, sometimes it can feel a little bit futile when you look at their profits or when you look at the way that they've structured the business. So I think, where just to kind of summarize that, I guess, like, I've started off with my values, and those are something that are core to Design for Good Club. But it gives me flexibility to sort of pick and choose dependent on what's kind of coming my way, and I'm giving myself that, the opportunity to, like, figure it out based on the project that they're coming to me with, if that makes sense.
It does. That's quite important, I guess, as well, as I think having that flexibility is quite helpful, as I'm sure, I mean, maybe you've had where someone maybe isn't necessarily that sustainable, but then they're trying to head down that direction, and I think obviously you're the perfect person to help them in getting into that kind of change and that transition. At which point, limiting it to those who are already there kind of maybe isn't necessarily inherently the best option. So that flexibility, it does make a lot of sense, for sure.
Yeah. And no one's, like, already there, right? Like, I don't know any business out there that's, like, 100% sustainable. I think it's everyone has like room to improve. I think a really good set of standards to look at is that kind of B Corp model. So they have quite like a holistic framework for analyzing your business in terms of sustainability from like an environmental perspective, a social perspective, or even like an economic perspective or where your office is kind of based. So yeah, that's a really good framework to sort of like assess where you're at. And I think you can do it for free. I don't think you have to like sign up or get a license. You can sort of do that impact assessment.
First step in getting actually certified, isn't it? So you can, I think that tool's available on our website for free. But you're right, the B Corp model's good because it's kind of based around continuous improvement, which is what all of sustainability is, rather than it, because I think particularly in our current sort of very polarized world, it's very easy to say, well, you're talking about doing X well, but actually you also do A, so you can't talk about X because fix A first and then we'll let you talk about X. But it isn't that at all.
Yeah, you do see that so often, don't you? It's like, can you call yourself an environmentalist if you're doing this? It's like, well, you probably... You're trying, like, come on, let's have some slack here. But yeah, 100%.
So is there... Sorry, go on.
I was just going to go back to something that you were saying there, that I think this is one of the problems with this space, is that it's so... people fear getting cancelled, and so therefore don't speak out about issues that they might care about. Or even if we're talking, let's say, like, on an e-commerce website, right? I've seen some brands that just don't even mention the aspects of their business that are sustainable. And I think some of this comes from that fear of maybe like greenwashing, or not being true to the actual nature of whether they're like conscious or not. I think it's a really tough space to be in, and I like really empathize with companies and that kind of like tricky balance of, I want to shout about the things that I'm doing and I want to be proud of it, versus is some of this greenwashing. Like, if I just give an example, right, one of the clients that I was working with recently, they're a coffee brand and they sell single origin coffee from places like Jamaica and Ethiopia. And the founder of that business was really struggling with whether or not to take part in Black Friday. And I was initially kind of working towards that deadline with her of, let's like relaunch the website for Black Friday, because I think it's a great opportunity where people are already buying. I know there's a lot of like shtick and negativity around it, but I think for small sustainable businesses, it's a really great opportunity to actually be known and put your kind of like face out there. And from my perspective, like, I'd rather the people that are kind of primed to shop on those days anyway are shopping for the sustainable option rather than the non-sustainable option. So if you're buying from that option, because she was really the founder was really struggling with that. I went around and thinking, actually, this is a good opportunity to relaunch the website. She did run with some Black Friday promotions, but I was just bringing this example up because I know it's such a fine and tricky balance for companies and founders to balance without feeling this like fear of getting cancelled or saying the wrong thing.
Yeah, it's true. It's something that Alex and I have struggled with, because it's exactly as you described. Like, well, it kind of goes against everything that we're trying to do, because we're trying to reduce the amount of waste that's produced, whilst Black Friday feels like, at least in its most traditional form, a sort of capitalist public holiday, shall we say. It's just a festival of buying stuff that you possibly don't need. But I think the way that the good balanced way to look at it is, if somebody's making purchases anyway, particularly if they're making purchases for things that they probably do actually need, but maybe are waiting to get a good price on that one particular day, if you're there to offer them a sustainable option, then you're helping one more person become sustainable rather than selling them something they didn't actually want in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was trying to sort of say. Like, I'd rather see like the market share of what people are kind of like purchasing, like goes towards those sustainable options. And there's ways of doing Black Friday in a way that doesn't feel like icky for sustainable brands. Like, you don't have to just slash your prices by 75% and sell like a t-shirt for £1, like boohoo my. I saw some really good examples of Black Friday campaigns last year in 2023. Like Plangaea were doing a promotion where you only got access to the 25% off code once you donated to one of their hand-picked charities. So I thought that was really good. I did kind of feel like there was a bit too much friction in that journey. Kind of, if you would maybe ask me at checkout to make that donation to get 25% off, I think I would have been more likely to have bought something. I think there was like, who was it? Organic Basic. So they sell like organic cotton underwear, really, really nice brand. I think they're from Copenhagen. And they do that, so it's not until like checkout where you can pick a charity to donate like 10% of the like overall like purchase order. What I'm trying to say is like there's different ways of doing Black Friday that you don't have to like buy into that like frenzy of like slashing prices. And we all know that trying to do like a price war just never works out for e-commerce companies anyway.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't.
It's a bit at Christmas. Did you see the I think it was Lidl or Aldi that didn't do a Christmas advert because they thought, you know, in alignment with the kind of cost of living crisis and paying their employees more, and in turn they probably got more PR from that than they would have any Christmas advert. And like, it's kind of, you can do something good and have the kind of positive kind of net effect.
It's clever that there's only so many times you can pull that trick before it stops working.
Probably just once, but it's that kind of vibe of you can change it up and not necessarily follow the crowd and make it work for you, as opposed to fear them. Like you say, you've got to kind of do a 75% sale, and at which point it does, when you're saying buy less, but except for today, buy more. it's a bit tricky, isn't it?
Doesn't really work there. That Lidl example reminds you of, I think it was Patagonia, I think it was 2018, where they went out with a campaign on Black Friday saying, do not buy this jacket. And it actually had the opposite effect. Everyone was buying that jacket. I mean, it was like, you know, reverse psychology 101 there, but
they knew what they were doing.
They probably did.
So Kim, is there anything that I guess sustainability brands are doing better than those outside of the sustainability world? So an example might be that it's easier to create a kind of brand story of genuine purpose if you're a sustainable brand versus conventional brands. They're not necessarily able to do it in the same way. Is there anything else that you think is kind of prevalent in that space?
I think that example that you gave is the one that I would say is that you stole an answer there. No, it's all good. I think they are just naturally better storytellers, although some of them don't make enough don't put enough emphasis on this. But the brands that like spring to mind are Girlfriend Collective. So they make sportswear out of recycled plastic bottles, and when they first kind of launched, that was like their huge thing. Like they were very like heavy in terms of the messaging on that. I think now that they've established themselves, you see a little bit less of that across their website. But I think why it just works well when it's just part of a company or brand's like business model is that it doesn't feel like inauthentic. It's not like an add-on, it's just how they operate. And I already mentioned Organic Basics, but they seem to just do a really good job of threading that sustainability message throughout the entire customer experience. It's not just like an add-on at the end or feels like an afterthought. It genuinely feels like it's something that they have like designed as part of their business operations and as part of like their full customer experience. So even from, you know, the homepage land, you're getting messages around like what the clothing is made of, even on the product display page. You're getting details around like where it's manufactured, more stuff around the kind of like materials, and even at checkout, you're getting messages around the amount of kind of carbon emissions that are being used to then transport that product to you. So it that they're so kind of considered in their approach to sustainability that it feels genuine when you compare it to maybe a brand that are having to tack on a sustainability onto them because their existing business model just isn't particularly circular, and maybe they've been in business for a lot longer and it takes more time for them to change that traditional business model. But when you kind of compare it to like newer brands, I think they're just in this like unique position where they can shape everything from scratch and they can actually make those decisions around how to be more circular, how to think about the full life cycle of the product, and embed sustainability into every step of the customer experience. Just to kind of summarize, I think they're just like naturally, they have a better story to tell that feels more genuine because they've just been able to think about these things as, say, a new brand.
Yeah, it's funny. It also, I think, coming back to you talking about explaining the full, the supply chain and everything else on the product, it weirdly feels more premium in my eyes. It feels like a more premium product when I can see where it's come from. And I guess you then are possibly more likely to spend more and go for that kind of higher quality product, a little bit like we were speaking earlier, off the back of that, even though it's not necessarily the goal. The goal was sustainability, but yet that inadvertently you create that message of premium quality, which I think is interesting. I guess you'll probably know more about that with your background in like behavior. Is that something you kind of are seeing?
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. I think people are kind of, some people have this expectation that like if you're buying something sustainable, there's a higher price point attached to it. And I think the reality is that there has to be, right? Because you're firstly paying fair wages to people. So you're actually recognizing that there's human labor that shouldn't be, oh my God, I've just lost my train of thought. there's human labor that you can't pay nothing for, right? But also, if you're really thinking about the materials that are being used, or you're thinking about like how something is being transported, you are being more like considered and you're kind of like crafting this like this experience. The like analogy that comes to mind is when you think of like farm to table chefs and restaurants, where literally every part of the customer experience has been designed. And I think when you add attention to detail to something, or the way that something is made, it has that kind of like premium quality, right? It's more thought out. It isn't like each decision it has just been come to by like random choice. It's actually being considered and thought through. So yeah, I'd like completely agree. I do think that like sustainable brands often have that kind of like premium vibe to them. And I think it's because of that like attention to detail and thought that goes into how the product is actually made and then delivered to the customer.
Is there a space, do you think, off the back of that, for perhaps sustainable brands that are more affordable and not necessarily in that premium space?
Yeah, the one brand that springs to mind is Tala. So, you know, Grace Beverly's activewear brand.
Yeah.
They initially kind of like marketed themselves as activewear that's sustainable, but still within that affordable price point. But as that brand, so I think it's amazing kind of what she's done to grow the brand and also to try to encourage people to consider how their clothes are made. And I think like activewear in particular is a very tricky segment, because in order to get that kind of like stretch, I think you're really limited in some of the materials that you can use. So yeah, I know I recognize that that's been a particular problem. But one thing that I've noticed seeing that kind of brand grow though is that they offer like, is it for like maybe 400 plus products on their site now, and it's starting to feel like they're just adding more and more collections and kind of moving away from that idea of buying less, consuming like it's starting some parts of the way that the business is run feels like it's going more comparable to a fast fashion brand with like regular drops, a larger product range. Those are usually two of the things that you kind of associate with your with your fast fashion brands. So I think when you start to make sustainable products affordable as a business, you're then stuck in this place of, okay, well, how do I increase my profits? How do I grow my business? And that's where you end up in a position where you're thinking, well, I need to have more products, or I need to do more regular drops. And I think that for me is where I don't think there's necessarily an answer that I've seen from brands out there that have managed to kind of like toe the line of being sustainable and affordable without then diluting some of the values that they might have.
Yeah. So it's not necessarily impossible, but there aren't many good examples of that yet. And I get, you know, actually, as you explained that, that made perfect sense to me, because those premium brands will have a much higher margin, which allows them to not have to sell as many to as many people. Whereas if you are doing it on an affordable level, the margin is therefore much smaller. Therefore, you need to sell more of them to more people and more, just keep going over and over again to sell them more. So you, maybe it isn't, maybe it's quite, that's why we don't see it, is because it's almost paradoxical.
Yeah, I think there's like, I guess if you're trying to sit in that space of being sustainable and affordable, you've kind of got like two options available. You either just sell more of the like types of products that you're selling already, or you add more ranges. So say you're only selling like t-shirts, for example, you're then selling trousers, and then you're kind of like broadening your catalogue by three different categories. The other thing that I've seen like work quite well, so you know those reusable and refillable deodorant brands like Wild, I've just bought Fussies, they are doing something quite nice where they're doing these like limited collections. So they'll have their like usual range. So Wild have like, I don't know, like 10 different colors that you can like just buy as like their standard range. But then they'll have collaborations with like different artists, or I think the recent one that I saw was when the Little Mermaid came out, you could get like a Little Mermaid case. So I do quite like that. It's like a little bit novel, but again, if you were going to be like really, really strict about stuff, you'd be like, well, maybe there's someone out there collecting all the different colors, and then they're not actually just buying one that they need. They're like, let me collect them all like they're Pokemon cards.
I guess you could maybe justify it a little bit, because if they're using them over and over again, then it's not too bad. But yeah, it's a very difficult balance.
It is. You could just be having one deodorant that you carry in your bag all the time, and then there's another one in the bathroom, another one in your living room.
just for all those deodorant emergencies.
Maybe they need to label them like that, you know, bathroom, bag, and then there you go, you've got a whole, you sold a person three of them instead of one. But yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? That is tricky.
Yeah, I mean, are there other challenges and opportunities that you think that sustainable brands face other than what we just talked about?
Yeah, I mean, we've covered some of the challenges by making, when you present yourself as like a sustainable brand or someone that's more conscious, you are going to put yourself forward for being judged through that lens a lot of the time, right? So like the client that I was talking about with her kind of Black Friday dilemma, that's like just inherently going to happen when you say publicly, like, this is who I am and these are my values. Like, you're going to get evaluated against those by the public. But talking about opportunities, I feel like it's a really exciting space to be exploring, like, innovative materials and thinking more about, like, how we can be using tech, like Pangaea. I think I've already mentioned them. They're super exciting to me because they're not just a clothing company. They're an innovative science materials company for me. Like, they, each of their items are made up of some kind of new type of material that tries to be as sustainable as possible, or like bio-based. So I think, yeah, we're seeing a lot more of that. I think, what did I see the other day? Stella McCartney has been experimenting with a seaweed-based yarn called Kelson. So I think she's going to be releasing a collection in spring, summer this year. So yeah, loads of opportunities to sort of like innovate and try out new things. I think if you're someone that has like an idea or has a desire to try and get into the space and make something new, there's so much opportunity to explore. And I think we need it. I think we need people that are willing to change the landscape here innovate.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think in our list of kind of talking points that we had that we wanted to kind of ask you, we've touched on quite a few of them already. I don't know about you, Alex, but I think three of these we kind of bring together. I think if you were to give some advice to a new, either a new brand starting out and wanting to be sustainable from the get-go, or an existing one wanting to move into that area, maybe they need to have different advice, maybe they don't, I don't know. But what sort of advice would you give them to help them translate those brand values and to stand out and cut through all of the greenwashing crap that will kind of try to drown them out?
That's a really good question. I'm trying to like think up what my framework is and try to summarize that. I think if you're an existing brand, a really good place to start is just by doing an audit, looking at your full kind of like business processes from start to finish and the full customer life cycle and journey, and thinking, okay, what parts of this am I already doing in the most sustainable way? And what parts of this are like terrible and could really do with some adjusting. You could then sort of prioritize them based on like value to the customer, value to the business, and then also impact on environmental, social, economic sustainability. From that list, I think you can then figure out, okay, what feels like it could be an easy target, maybe something that's like kind of low effort, but actually has like a lot of value and would have a high impact on how sustainable you are, tackling those ones off first. I think it can be easy to maybe feel like overwhelmed by that list, but thinking, okay, let's just try and fit as much as we can within the resources and the capacity that we've got as a business, and testing and iterating on it. So maybe at first you try something, it doesn't work, iterate. So I come from like a product design background where we are constantly trying to solve things in using the least effort as possible to drive the highest value. So that's the kind of like perspective that I would be kind of looking at sustainability from if I was a business. If I was a new brand, what would I be doing? I'd be speaking to scientists. I'd be speaking to like people like really at the forefront of like developments in sustainability, and seeing how I can leverage some of that. Like, I watched this documentary, I think it was called Fashion Reimagined, and it was looking at fashion, people that are interested in fashion that were kind of leading the way in sustainability in Asia. And there was like one, I think there was like one factory where they were figuring out a way of, you know, all of those like clothes that kind of get recycled, but it's really hard to turn those items of clothing into something else because it's so mixed in with other fabrics. Yeah. They figured out a way of pulling all of those fabrics apart, and then being able to like turn that into usable yarn that can then create other items of clothing, and then 3D printing that clothing. So yeah, it's really, really, really cool. And that's the kind of thing that I would be looking at if I was like a new brand. And yeah, that, I think that's all right. That, did that answer your question?
Yeah, I think it does. No, it's. I think what's coming across is there are challenges that we face in trying to, one, actually solve the sustainable problems or sustainability problems that we face as a species. And I think your approach is very much that the status quo of how we're kind of trying to deal with them is not necessarily going to work. We need to find new and innovative solutions in tackling them. And therefore, if you are a new brand, you're kind of in prime position to try and utilize some of those. I guess there is one kind of drawback to that, in that if you are a new brand, I hope you've got deep pockets if you're going to want to go and do those things. Maybe those more established ones, once they've done all of the audits and kind of started the realignments that you kind of talked about, maybe they have the pockets that are deep enough that can kind of do some of those things as well. It depends on a case-by-case basis. I've tried to get you to give very generic advice that actually should be quite specific to individual businesses and brands, but I think it's useful because it's made me think about things a little bit differently as well.
Yeah, and I guess some, like, just coming back to those deep pockets, I guess there are some materials that are available now and you don't necessarily need to kind of be creating them. It just might be that they're not commonly used, or they're not kind of used in that context that you're thinking. Like, I guess an example would be a little bit like that seaweed yarn. It was something being made from mushrooms. And you're kind of like, that's really cool. Like, I'm sure there is a context that could be applied to that hasn't been done yet. And getting the fabric probably isn't that problematic, given that it's kind of starting to be commercialized a little
I haven't seen these. So are these supposed to be replacements for, say, polyester and synthetic fabrics? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like alternative kind of materials. I think, Alex, are you talking about mushroom leather? I've seen so many like alternatives to leather, like people trying to recreate that same feel through like pineapple. So yeah, there's definitely that kind of innovation that's happening. And what you were talking about there, like, is an innovation 101, is where like something's happening in a different category, but maybe you can apply it to your own. Your own industry or your own category. I was going to say something based on what you just said as well, Mike, which was, this was it. It was the deep pockets thing. I've noticed more recently that, so even if you don't have your own personal deep pockets, there are also a lot of impact funds kind of popping up. So funds that are like specifically like out there to help entrepreneurs or businesses that are trying to have like a positive impact on the environment. So even in the EU, right, there's like grants that you can get for being a business that is looking at something sustainable or working in green tech. So I think for anyone that's listening that is interested in setting up their own sustainable business, like definitely looking at where you can get funding from innovation funds or like impact funds, especially if you feel like it's needed to kind of explore and experiment with like new materials or new technology. There's a lot of kind of government grants and funding out there to support that.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, because I think those sorts of pots of money are growing as well, because they're necessary to help solve the problems that we face as a species, because it isn't going to be startup businesses on their own that are going to solve it, or even existing businesses on their own that are going to solve it. It is going to be very much a combined collective effort. So I think we've talked about quite a lot there. I think maybe a slightly different kind of question to ask you is, rather than a sustainable brand, what advice would you give them? What advice would you give to someone looking to go into design or existing agencies that want to support? I mean, maybe I'm teaching people to be your competitor, but everyone likes a bit of healthy competition. What do they need to be doing to help support more businesses become more sustainable?
Yeah, great question. And I like to see them not as competition, but as community. I do think that this space like needs more designers. And actually, like I have started partnering with a brand designer in this space, because like we're not competitors. There needs to be more of us working together, partnering and trying to go after bigger projects. And the type of work that other agencies that maybe aren't thinking about this should be doing. So in terms of how other designers can kind of get into this or better support sustainable brands, I think for me, one place that I'm looking at is how web design itself can be more sustainable. So we know that data centers use up a lot of energy. And we know that like certain hosting services don't use green energy. So for me, my own website, the websites that I kind of build for clients are built on green servers, like Green Geeks. And so just making that switch from a non-renewable server to a renewable one can have massive increase in terms of like your sustainable impact. But there's other small design choices that you can make that also have an impact on how much like carbon emissions your like website emits. So things like kind of going like dark mode, right? That actually emits a lot less light and it uses a lot less energy. Certain like font choices. So this is a tricky one, because as a brand, you want to stand out. And so if you're using like default system fonts, it can be tricky to feel like you're standing out. Yeah. But those, again, use a lot less energy than all of your custom fonts that you're uploading. So if you can, try and like reduce the number of like fonts that you're using. I mean, it's good practice anyway to not have like 15 fonts on your website anyway. There's loads of information out there. So I think it's sustainable web design where a lot of this information kind of sits. So I think for all designers, like being aware of these best practices will make you a better designer, and also you'll be having a positive impact on the environment. And then if you're an agency, again, these are the decisions that you could be like guiding your clients through, especially if they want to have a more sustainable if they want to be more sustainable, or even if they're not, you know, I think even if they're not, like these are the types of things that we should be helping our clients with. And it is difficult, because a lot of the trends that you see in design, like having these like big sexy hero videos, like they look nice, but they're incredibly energy intensive. I think it is a difficult thing, because the things that you think make the design look good are actually not great for the environment. So I think the way that I kind of approach it is, how much of this is necessary to convert the customer? Or is this actually like just because it, you know, like aesthetically looks nice?
Yeah.
And I do struggle with that as a designer myself. So
it's funny as well, because that's not the sort of thing that people are seeing, is it? I think it's oftentimes people will chase the sustainability kind of metrics that are visible to the public, as opposed to those invisible things like your fonts and like not having a video. It's almost like, I guess the parallel that comes into my head is like the fitness industry. You see loads of like absolutely jacked people or super skinny, and they are like the epitome of fitness, because that looks to be fitness. But the reality is probably the average Joe is probably a lot healthier, because they're not just eating, I don't know, chicken and broccoli every day and have like a varied diet, and you know what I mean? So it's kind of like that side feels similar for sustainability. The ones that don't necessarily look as all singing or dancing may well be the ones that are actually the ones doing a better job of it, potentially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a really good analogy. I like that one. I'm gonna
there we go.
Yeah, I think it can swing. It can also swing the other way. Like, I can't remember the brand name, but I remember seeing a website where they had become like so conscious of sustainability, and I get where they were coming from and what they were trying to do. But instead of having like product images, they had like illustrations of the products. And so until you clicked on the product, you wouldn't see the actual the actual product image itself. And great in terms of like loading speed, performance times, and like using less energy, but actually for the customer experience, it wasn't great. Like, I don't have any sense of what that product looks like until I click on it. Builds a bit of friction. So I think as a designer or as a brand, when you're trying to make these decisions, I think you have to kind of like make trade-offs between what the customer experience is, the business impact that you're able to have, and also like the impact on sustainability and the environment. So yeah, it's a balancing act, with all things.
Yeah, just like everything else with sustainability, it's all about balancing. That's cool. It's been really, really insightful, really useful, and hopefully people can take quite a lot of good information away and help them in their own sustainable journeys. Is there anything else that you think might be useful, or anything you want to add?
I can't think of anything. I realise that I haven't asked either of you any questions. I've just been like, okay.
That's because you know far more than we do. So we've been asking.
That's not true at all. Do you know what? I always like asking people this question, because it introduces me to new brands. But for both of you, like, what are your favourite sustainable companies, or what's like some of the examples of things that you've seen working well for brands most recently?
Something I'm using at the moment that isn't necessarily a sustainable brand, but is maybe a sustainable kind of concept, is Vinted. So for example, I'm wearing a pair of trousers at the moment, like, and I think I got them for like £2, which is crazy value. But it's because someone else didn't want them, and therefore it's not like gone into the bin. Great for me. Got an absolute steal. So it's not necessarily inherently sustainable, but it does mean that stuff isn't going to landfill or just being worn once and bin. Like, it's getting a bit more of a circular life cycle. And arguably, I needed some new trousers, so I was like, let's have a little look, see what we can do. Yeah, it worked out okay.
Happy day. Go on.
What's that? The reselling market's great though. I do think it is sustainable, right? Because rather than you buying new, you're buying a product that's already out there. So you're making a choice for products that are already in circulation, rather than for brands to be producing new items over and over. So yeah, big fan of that. I think the biggest difficulty I've found with buying off your Depops and your Vinted is not being able to like try it on at first. So I really struggle with sizing. So that's been one thing that's kind of made it hard for me to like switch. So I still only buy secondhand, like from secondhand stores that I can go into in person, which is a shame because I'd love to be able to just completely switch over to only buying secondhand. It's just, yeah.
Nice as well, I think. Go on, sorry.
Do the trousers fit you well?
They do. And I think the other bonus is that like I have kids. So I think like it's all well and good buying like a really expensive premium thing that's going to last you years, but my kids will trash it. Like, you know, like within a week it'll be in bits or like be stained or something. So I think, yeah, like the premium market is good for me because I'm like, okay, if they ruin it, it's not the end of the world, which the odds are. I mean, they're doing okay so far, but you know, we're only a couple of weeks in, so it's... there's still time.
Yeah, for me, I have a couple that I either do use or have used. One of them is, I don't know, I think the pronunciation is Groom, G-R-U-U-M. And they do all sorts of cosmetic stuff. But like I tend to use bars of soap because they're far more sustainable than like squirty soaps and stuff like that. But I needed a shampoo. And Groom do all sorts of different like cosmetics, but in sort of bar and sort of powdery gel forms as well. So I just get bars of shampoo from them. There's two that are it's kind of closer to what Alex was talking about. It's one called Olio, which I haven't used for a while, but I used to use, and one called Too Good To Go. And they both kind of look at Olio is a bit more generalized, but they both look at food waste. And you can use them to take away from businesses like restaurants or supermarkets that have got food that if it's not bought that day is going to get thrown away. So you can go and get like a little package of whatever, and it's a little bit potluck, which I don't quite like. I think if it I'd probably use it more if I knew what I was getting, but then it probably wouldn't be as cheap because I'd be able to calculate it and everyone else would be calculating it and working out, well, actually, you know what? That's still good value. I'll pay a little bit more for it. There was one recently that I thought was quite funny that I saw on, I think it was Instagram. Someone had been to Aldi and they got one like salad box and then 30 something packs of cheese. And that was all they got in their Too Good To Go parcel that week. But it's a good way, it's a good way of trying new things as well that you might not have otherwise tried. And it's a good way to just sort of help cut down on food waste as well. So I think that's a good one.
I thought of another very unsexy one that I buy from, and that is Who Gives a Crap. I go to them for my toilet roll. Yeah, it's not that trendy, but it's, to be honest, it's really convenient. Like, if nothing else, like, not having to, like, worry about buying it or running out as they're just, you know, every 3 months or whatever, send me a big box. The boxes are really cool as well. There's some good banter on the boxes. So, yeah.
Not like the penguin bars and those, like, cringy dad jokes.
I mean... similar vibe, but it's I like it. There's even there's a website on the middle of the roll once you get to the center, and if you go on it, it's got like a thing with jokes on it, so you can just like see jokes while you're sitting on the toilet, which again, it's just little things like that that I think is quite entertaining.
You have to have used all the roll before you get to the joke though.
You do that. That's what happens when you're waiting for someone to bring you another toilet roll. You can have a little blast at your jokes on your phone. Maybe, I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. It's convenient and just so happens to be eco-friendly, which is a bonus.
Winning.
Yeah. I think that's kind of like trick, isn't it, for brands, is that like people are going to buy from you because you're sustainable. Like, I don't think I've ever thought, like, let me buy from this place because they like do this. It's more, I like the product, and I want that product, And as a second, like, kind of afterthought, it's okay, well, this product is also sustainable. I'd love to be able to say that, like, I'm bi because it's sustainable, but that's not the truth. So I'm not going to sit here and lie about it. And I think that's the case for most people. And I think for brands that are trying to get into the space, like, creating a product that actually is appealing, aesthetic, is like usable is the trick. And then, you know, people are thinking, it's that feel good factor, isn't it? When you know that you've also made a good purchase as well.
Definitely. So you've got maybe a couple more minutes left. Do you want to give us a quick pitch for Design for Good Club?
Sure, we can do a little bit of self-promotion. So Design for Good Club is a design studio that grows and elevates your brand and your marketing efforts. For those of you that are sustainable or have a positive impact on people and the planet. So we work with founders all across the world to elevate their online presence. So we do this through design practices, getting better at telling your stories around sustainability, and making sure that your customer experience is designed to use your kind of sustainability as a superpower. So if you are interested in growing your brand this year and taking it to the next level, you can find us on our website. So it's designforgood.club, and you can contact us there.
Yeah, so thanks so much for listening. Thank you, Kim, for joining us today. I can personally vouch, having worked with Kim in the past, like, she's amazing at what she does. So if you do need any help with that sort of thing, definitely get in touch with her, and I'm sure she'll be able to help support your brand and grow it if you're in the sustainable space.
Brilliant. Yeah, thanks for your time, Kim.
Thanks for having me.
That's been a pleasure. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Sustainability Scope. If you liked what you heard, then be sure to subscribe and turn on notifications so you never miss an episode. Follow us on social media too by searching The Sustainability Scope. This episode of The Sustainability Scope was brought to you by AM Custom Clothing. If you need sustainable custom branded clothing for your business, band or brand, head to amcustomclothing.co.uk today.